Fred Film Radio.
Fred Film Radio, I'm Matt Micucci from the 2018 Cairo International Film Festival, and I'm very pleased to be joined by filmmaker Nicolas Champeau. Thank you very much for joining us.
My pleasure.
And you're here presenting your film, The State Against Mandela and the Others. So, for the benefit of the listeners who are not familiar with the film, would you like to maybe say a few words to introduce it?
Well, in a nutshell, it's a story about Nelson Mandela's trial, but he wasn't tried on his own. There were eight other co-accused with him, and people really don't know them, yet they took the same risks, made the same sacrifices, spent the same number of years in prison, and they decided to take on the apartheid regime during their own trial, actually making their case worse because they risked the death penalty. So that's the story of the film. Their trial for sabotage, and they decide not only to denounce the apartheid regime, because they were ambassadors in the press at the trial, but also to promote their own movement and to show how reasonable it was and to explain to the press and even to the judge, in fact, the grievances of the black people during the apartheid regime. And the film is based on audio archives of the trial, because they were recently recovered. They were gathering dust for some 50 years. And we run some of these extracts in the film, quite a few, actually. And when we do so, we have animations on the screen.
Right. And that's quite a lot of hours of audio material, right? It's a lot, hundreds of hours.
Yeah, 256 hours, yeah. So to go through them, you know, type them, write down the type code, it was a little bit time-consuming.
Right. So how would you say, well, you were there for a while too, right? I remember in the introduction yesterday you said an hour, a year.
Well, no, I was actually 3 years in South Africa. I was based in Johannesburg. I was the bureau chief of in Southern Africa for Radio France International. So it covers Zimbabwe, the Comoros, Madagascar, but South Africa a lot, obviously, because I was based there. And it was the run-up to the football soccer World Cup, so there were exciting times. Politically, it was interesting also. But I was there for the 20th anniversary of Nelson Mandela's liberation in 2010, so this gave me an opportunity to interview Mandela's best friend, George Bizos, who was his lawyer. He knew him for more than 65 years, Ahmed Kathrada, Andrew Mlangeni. So I met them a little bit less than 10 years ago. And but at the time, we were all obsessed putting together material for Mandela's obit, because his death would be, from a media coverage point of view, similar to the fall of the Berlin Wall or to the death of John Paul II. So although I did do lengthy interviews with his comrades in arms, everything not related to Nelson Mandela, I edited out. And I thought it was a shame because, I mean, they're brave men. They have an amazing story to tell. They each individually wrote interesting books, but I never really managed to exploit all that material, if I may say, until I heard from a guy who invented the machine to digitize the sound archives of the trial. And I was like, well, the trial is a nice way to bring them all together, because trials, as you know, are great for cinematography. You know, they're bad guys, the prosecutor, they're good guys, they're lawyers, there's the judge, you never know what he thinks. Then there are comrades who are going to betray the co-accused. So it's a little bit like a fiction.
Right. I think directly or indirectly, however you want to look at it, the fact that this film is also includes the word "the others" in the title is because it almost like looks at a way in which history is often told. Because when we talk about the history of Nelson Mandela, you really do only hear or see the name Nelson Mandela. You rarely ever see, unless you're looking at in-depth tellings of the history of Nelson Mandela, about the other ones who were really played vital key roles in the whole events.
Well, I think there are two reasons for this. First of all, to be more efficient, a movement needs a face, a movement needs a brand, and they chose Mandela as the brand because he was wise, he was articulate, he was one of the rare members of the movement to have studied, he was a lawyer, so he could express himself eloquently. So this was a collective decision to choose him, and I think it worked given the awareness it enabled. And the second reason would be that it is a collective. I mean, they were influenced by the Communist Party in Russia and in China, and you put forward the group, and they didn't really mind, you know, not being in the spotlight. Having said that, we interviewed them, you know, for some of them, a couple of months before they died. I think it's they deserve a tribute. They deserve to be known by the wide public who goes to the movies, because I mean they had wives too, they had fiancés. One of the women in the film, because we also interview relatives, she was the fiancée of accused number 5. Her name is Sylvia Neem. She had to have an abortion 2 years before the trial because she was white, he was Indian. If they were caught because of the Immorality Act, they would be sentenced to prison for 7 years. And he said, I can't have a baby. We would need to go into exile, and I'm helping Mandela here in South Africa. So this is the degree to which they would go, you know, put aside their family and personal lives and focus entirely on the struggle. And we thought it was important for the people who were affected by this 100% involvement to have a say and to tell their story also, because this woman, Sylvia Neem, she saw him after he was released 26 years later. And we have letters of them exchanging, you know. And she reads one of these letters when he's in prison during the trial. This is really... it's very emotional when she tells that story. Same thing for Winnie Mandela. We did the last film interview for Winnie Mandela, and ironically, she told us that the easiest way for her to see her husband was when he was in court, because he was a clandestine, moving on from houses to houses, never home, working for the movement, and then. But she could see him when he was in court.
Yeah, were they happy to tell their story?
I think they were happy for several reasons. First of all, because, as you said, because the focus was entirely on Nelson Mandela, for once they could tell their story. Mind you, again, I mean, we had to do marathon interviews for them to start talking about intimate things and personal things, because they always put the group forward, and they feel that if they're going to go get personal, they're going to be selfish and, you know, and complain and so on and so forth. But they were really happy also because they had never listened to the audio archives of the trial, at the end of which they were sentenced to life imprisonment. So this was new for them, you know. They've been telling their stories of, you know, in relation to Mandela over and over and over. But this time we brought them some really precious audio material, which they listened to during the film. We actually shoot them as they're listening with kind of vintage headphones, and you can see their reaction on the screen. So they're friendly, accessible people. You know, they're not like, you know, you're a documentary filmmaker, but I'm a hero. They're not that kind of people.
Yeah. No, but that's good that you bring that up, because when they do listen to those audio tapes, there's something, their face. I mean, I was fascinated, because in a way they are remembering what happened back then. And even though, like, we may look at them tragically, I think there's a part of them that remembers the excitement of those times and the excitement of what they went through, because it really must have been an incredible thing. So it says a lot about memory, personal memory as well as historical memory. Wouldn't you agree?
Yes, and it's also quite rare, in fact, in a documentary to have close-up shots of of people listening to audio material which goes back more than 50 years. And it's true that even if sometimes, I mean, it's not that they laugh or that they're in tears when they listen to it, but when you listen to the gravity of what's being said in court and what the stakes are, and the fact that this trial has cost them, you know, a third of their life, and you're in admiration when you find out what they did and to what extent they were involved, and the risks they took, just seeing their face, their old face, you know, being entirely focused, because when they listen very carefully, and it brings them back 55 years later when they were in a racist regime, not allowed to roam freely. Of course, the judge is white, the prosecutor is white, the prosecutor is against them. It's not going to be a fair trial. They may never see their kids again, and they listen to that tape, you know, more than 50 years ago on screen. It's very moving.
Mm-hmm. So we're running out of time, but I did want to... We mentioned it briefly at the start of the interview. You mentioned it, the animation that was used, because obviously there is no footage to go with the audio that was recovered. And I think it's great. I think it's great. But also, no, I don't just think it's a good choice, but I also think it's great animation, because the style itself, it's almost like this black and white... blackboard type style, and I'd just like to know more about it.
Well, it's a kind of a, it's like, yeah, you're right, it's dense and like black charcoal to kind of recreate the suffocation that you would have in a courtroom, you know, the anxiety which comes with such an important trial. And it's not very technically precise. Uld, the animation, is a real artist. Yeah. He loves abstraction. I think he did figurative animation. He did metaphoric animation, but he really also did abstract animation, because apartheid means separate development. You know, so, and to represent this is quite easy. You do a black form, you do a white form, and you do a, you cross them and you draw a separation in the middle. So he explores these three universes, and I think it works, especially sometimes the emotion, the sound of the trial, of the stakes in the trial, and the fight between the prosecutor and the accused brings up so much emotion that figurative and or illustrative work do not match this, the emotion, the sound. So this is when we told Uld, for these moments you can go full abstract, because the figurative would not sustain the sound. And also you can play with animation, you can exaggerate things a little bit. I mean, the prosecutor, he's really mean, he's really putting up a show in front of the secret police and the media, so we play with his character, we exaggerate it. This is also the freedom which animation allows.
Yeah. Almost recalling visually the trial by Kafka.
A little bit, yeah.
But that's good, it's creative. It's great to see such creation in documentaries such as this. So thank you very much for talking with us about it. It was a great pleasure.
You're more than welcome.
Thanks a lot. And this is Fred Film Radio, the Festival Insider.
Fred Film Radio, 24/7 on Fred.fm and smartphone apps.